Okay, it's episode 14 of the Back to Front Show, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Mark Sturton, live from Wales this week, Kieran.
Afternoon.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Any boy racers outside the window today?
No, pretty clear today. I might have a tractor in a minute.
A tractor? No roaming animals in the streets or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Just
a bit suburban for roaming animals.
Well, that's a shame. You do give this impression of Wales being a... Well, politely say a bit of a rural area.
Yes.
I couldn't think of anything.
I'm sandwiched between two very rural areas.
Yes, you are the filling in between two rural areas.
Indeed.
It's been a busy week for both of us.
It has. Sunny Bath?
Oh, Sunny Bath is, well, it is sunny now.
It
was drizzly this morning as I was on the school run with the two little ladies. Wearing shorts, I refuse to admit that summer is over.
No, fair enough.
Are you shorted?
No, I'm in jeans.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, as you've gone back to university, which you'll tell us more about soon, I imagine these are kind of low slung around your bottom.
And, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's like Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, and you're showing a bit of fake Calvin Klein undergarment.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
That is an image for everyone listening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you've gone back to university.
Well, I haven't. Actually, I've always been at university. I've never left, really.
You're one of those lifers.
Perpetual student. No, I'm teaching.
You're teaching?
On a part-time basis, obviously.
Professor Masterton.
Professor Masterton, yes.
Masterton, yes. Tell us all about it.
Well, it's not much to know, really. It's I'm teaching three different web design modules, web design and web development, and sort of the third one's more sort of self-promotion and distribution and stuff online.
You're just promoting yourself for a whole module?
Well, hopefully helping students promote themselves ready for leaving university in the third year.
Is this industry podcast part of the curriculum?
It is not. What should you think? It should be required listening? Do you
required listening? Is there such a thing? I know you have required reading lists. Surely,
no, you could put that on the curriculum. Yeah, they could be required to listen to something. Though I don't think boosting our listening figures with my students is probably the best idea.
Really?
No.
I mean, I'll take any listener. Really.
There's some ethics issues there.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, you have to attend an ethics workshop or something here.
Hmm. I'm sure I've done one of those before in the past. Somewhere in the maybe when I worked in the NHS. I'm sure we did one of those.
I was excited to find that Mr. Greysocks' book was on the shelves in the library.
Which one? Sexy Web Design?
Sexy Web Design, yeah. He was stoked when I sent him a picture of it.
He loves that title. Apparently he thought it up all by himself.
Yeah, I heard there was no publisher involvement.
No publisher involvement at all. Sexy. No. Rumour has it, and it cannot be qualified by any living being that yes, he inherited the title.
Yes.
But there you go. But Sexy Web Design translated into numerous languages. I believe it is Das Sexy Web Design in German.
Nice. It had been checked out several times.
Had it?
Yes.
Is it well thumbed?
Yeah, well, relatively, yeah. It had that sort of plastic, you know, covering on it, so
very apt for a book of that name.
Indeed, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so when do the students go back? Are they?
Well, I don't start teaching until late September.
And then you finish in November or something.
But of course, there'll be sort of two freshers weeks or something, you know, crazy partying and all that stuff prior to my, you know, pipe-smoking leather patches arrival.
Do you have some kind of embroidered emblem for your smoking jacket?
No, not as yet.
Oh, I thought there'd be a UOG one.
I have been browsing pipes.
Pipes, yeah.
Obviously not lit, just you know.
Just to hold.
Just to hold, yeah.
Yes.
Comfort blanket.
So you've been busy there. You had your first day there yesterday.
Yes, I did, yeah. Induction.
Induction, you were inducted.
I was inducted, yes.
Does everyone look so young, though? That's what I always find at these events.
Well, students look young, yes. All my colleagues look pretty much the same as me.
Blimey. Low slung denim and fake Calvin Kleins. Anyway, I was down in Brighton this week.
You were. Reasons to be happy.
Creative.
Yes.
Yes. It was brilliant, actually. Old Johnny Belmont did 3 days fun-packed, filled with inspiration.
It did look pretty epic from afar. You know, it's the first time I've really been, you know, aware of it in the Twitter sphere.
on the Twits. Yeah, it was really good. Lots and lots of people there. He had all, if anyone's been to Deconstruct or Responsive Day Out, it's in the same venue, but he has all of the theatres, including the little one, which is now known as the studio, which is kind of round the back. I think it's called the Pavilion, which you get in on a different street. And so it's three tracks and, wow. Yeah, so there's a hell of a lot of choice, but it was very refreshing in many ways because it wasn't a web conference as such. There were a lot of people you'd know from the web, but mm-hmm. there were, you know, illustrators, John Bergman, people like that, and they had these inspired, what they call the inspired sessions, which took place from 8 till 9. So they had the bar open for a bit before, and you could get a cheap drink, and then you could go in and see these hour long presentations, and then there were more very cheap beers afterwards, and yeah, really kind of. Although on first inspection, you think that's a really long day, but because of the breaks and everything, it made it, you know, very social as well. And on the first night, Stefan Sagmeister talked, and which was fascinating, really interesting guy. And on the second day, Eric Spiekerman spoke. And you would not believe it, but the guy does a quite amazing Liverpudlian accent.
Really?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Uncanny.
It was uncanny. He went with a Birmingham as well. He did a Birmingham accent, but right. the Scouse did win out. But yeah, his talk was really interesting. There's lots of funny stuff in there, but also a lot of really useful takeaways. It wasn't on type. He said had he done his type talk, we would all been bored senseless for 2 hours with Kerning and whatnot. But yeah, this was all about process and how they work at his company and. You know, what his retirement plans are, which basically looks like printing lots of sort of printing on his home presses and stuff like that. So yeah, it was really interesting. But yeah, lots of good stuff there. I recommend it to anyone for 2014. It was you know, blessed with great weather. Really nice bunch of people down there as well. Met some new friends, saw some old friends. It was all good. But yeah, had a stand as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go well?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Mm-hmm. Lots of people coming going, what is this digest thing? And I was like, well, it's a magazine. Oh, it's big.
Friendly, isn't it? What's this?
It's big, and then they put it down and walked off. So I did, you know, my sales, those sales trainings sessions I had, you know, when I sold carpets, clearly they've escaped me.
Did you say, yeah, but you can fold it in half?
You can fold it hard, feel the quality. It's all about the quality. But anyways, yeah. So busy week, but we've made it again. This is another week following on from last week. No hiatus.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's no hiatus, but this is the full extended 128-bit edition, which basically means we've got a discussion topic.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, you know, we're messing up the formats. It's all good. It's all good. But on with the news. And
which isn't really, we should always caveat this, it's not really news.
No, it's not really news.
Some of it is news, but some of it's just interesting links that we like.
Four choice cuts from around the web this week.
Thank you.
Four choice cuts. Your microphone does sound a little bit iffy today, Kieran. I've got to be honest with you. You might need to twiddle your cable again.
Okay. Better?
There we go. Yes, better. Better. Okay. Cool. So you're kicking off. This is becoming a bit of a trend.
Right.
And, yeah, news about Lanyard. This is news, actually.
That's yours.
Oh, that's me. God, dear. Okay. my first link is all about Lanyard.
Really?
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, they've been acquired by Eventbrite. Did you know that, Kieran?
I didn't hear that. So what's that about?
Well, you actually put this link in and ascribed it to me. So, anyways. Yeah, so our friends Natalie and Simon and crew have joined the Eventbrite team. Uh-huh. Lanyard's become part of the Eventbrite family, I think, pretty much immediately. It looks like they've been, I guess, had this one under wraps for a while because they've got quite a bit of integration already. So, yeah, they raised $1.4 million over the last few years into Lanyard. And but we couldn't find a sale price. Did you find one?
No, didn't find one up everywhere, but couldn't see anything.
Yeah, but what do you make of that then? I was, it's silly to say I was a little bit disappointed. That would be the wrong word, but I kind of, I thought they were really sort of going in a direction was sort of set to maybe take on Eventbrite. But I get the union. It makes a lot of sense. And I don't think any of us would have done any different. But what's your take on it?
It's interesting because I sort of saw them as quite different companies. In terms of culturally, if you see what I mean, or their approach to building stuff for the web, I kind of see Eventbrite as a bit backward.
Oh, really?
Which might be a controversial thing to say. Maybe that's not the case, but that's kind of my experience of using Eventbrite, not to put on venues, but not put on sorry, events, but to, but either for integration, which I've done before, or just as a as somebody attending an event, has always been that things are a bit backward and aren't that great. Maybe that's completely unfair. I don't know, but and I kind of using Lanyard, I kind of felt that they kind of got it a bit more and were a bit more savvy, and that, yeah, as you said, that they were looking to kind of move into that space rather than merge with someone else. But you know, it's an obvious marriage, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. There's a whole bunch of ticketing systems. Our friend Dave and co, the Doc, doing Tito, which is the system that we use pretty much exclusively now. Eventbrite's out there, Amiando, which is another one. There's a bunch, and it's an interesting space, and everyone has their sort of favorites for various reasons, and I think as people put on more and more events, they want more and more from these systems in terms of capturing information and integration and that kind of thing. What I loved about Lanyard, and why I thought they might have paved their way sort of with their own ticketing application, I guess, was that you know, you've got that amazing discovery, you've got that amazing sort of social discovery, you know, finding new conferences or events, and then sort of seeing what other people have attended, and all the linking of the media and the presentations and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, you know, if they'd added that extra bit of actually curating your own event, and, you know, having schedule management and all that kind of stuff, which, again, who's to know, that may well come, you know, down the road. I thought they were, you know, in a prime position to really take on these guys, but yeah, fair play to them. You know, if a company like Eventbrite comes knocking at your door and offers to buy you, who would do any different?
Well, yeah, true. And I was going to say, you know, often the personal situation of the people involved is always a huge factor in this, and that's something that anyone sitting outside can't speculate, you know.
Exactly.
There's, you know, a big fat check being waved in front of your face, and that person might actually be quite bored of the company they're working in, or might be looking to move on to a new challenge or something. It just comes along at the right time. So I think that, you know, people forget that there's actually human beings behind these companies, and that they you know, can see themselves being quite comfortable for a long time with the money involved, or B, might actually be a little bit, you know, have itchy feet anyway.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of functionality. I'm just looking at the page now, actually, where you can actually build schedule grids and rooms and all sorts. So I'm a little bit behind the curve, having not run an event through it. So maybe this is just, you know, the final piece of the puzzle.
Yes.
I wonder, do we know if they're all going to move over to the States? Is that part of the thing? Are they going to be...
I don't know. I have not read anything about the individuals involved. It's all the stuff I've read has all been sort of, you know, figures based and stuff, but annoyingly nothing to do with the actual, you know, deal itself.
Yeah.
What they've raised in the past and stuff.
The Lanyard story is very inspiring, actually. I'm not sure how well you know it, but we interviewed Natalie and Simon when Elliot and I did the Insights Tour over 2 years ago. And somewhat annoyingly for the person interviewing them, i.e. me, they told me beforehand that they'd secured a chunk of change as investment, but they couldn't announce it for a couple of weeks, and I think that would have ended the journey from the app that they built on honeymoon to getting, you know, over $1 million worth of investment. It would have been a really nice end, but that had to wait, unfortunately. But yeah, the story's amazing, the product's amazing, so I'm sure they'll take it on and you know, build on it and make it even better. It'd be really interesting to see where they go. They've there's one thing here that you'll like. They've done 22,966 code commits as of the time of blogging about their announcement of the acquisition. That's quite a lot.
It is, yeah.
That's quite a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I wish them all the best for that.
Definitely.
It's a great story, and look forward to seeing where it goes. Mm-hmm. My second one was about Speed Awareness Month.
Yes.
Yes, and
speed kills.
Yes, stop, look, and listen, and all that kind of stuff. But this is a blog, effectively, all about improving the performance of your website. So, speeding up your website, basically. This is something I've, I wouldn't say got a little obsessed about, but at the beginning of the year, I started looking into all these things and trying to work out why my sites were slow and how we can tweak a little bit of performance out of them. I'm by no means an expert. It's just something I found particularly interesting. And these little tweaks you can make do make an awful lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole bunch of articles, and it's quite funny. You're reading them, and then you'll get to the end of one, and it'll be like, "Oh yeah, you can use so and so by so and so." When you work out that the guy writing it is you know pitching his product, but that's all good. I've actually found out quite a lot of things, but yeah, it's speedawarenessmonth.com, and there's everything from tips to speeding up your responsive website.
I was just looking at that. Yeah,
caching, the benefits of caching, web performance, latency, all these kind of things. One for you, the asset delivery from your Rails app, things like that.
Yeah.
And they're short, snappy articles. And, you know, one that everyone should read who's running WordPress. You know, why is my WordPress site running slow? Again, this guy, I think he works for a WordPress hosting company, but,
Speed your WordPress site up company. Yeah.
But, you know, he talks about CDNs, all that kind of stuff. And these are small things that we can all, you know, add to our sort of knowledge and make our sites that a little bit quicker, even on, you know, things like shared hosted platforms and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at the WordPress article right now, and you know, while it's all familiar stuff in terms of our plugins to blame, you know, is your hosting provider to blame, do you need a DNS or DNS, a CDN, all these things are familiar stuff, but it's good to have them collated all in one place, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially with frameworks or platforms, if you will, like WordPress, where you can go and, you know, you throw in this plugin, you throw in that plugin, you blah blah blah, and you know, you use the inbuilt sort of the recommended way of adding assets to the head when really they should go in the footer. And this, if you just learn that little bit more about it, you can often tweak things like using the, you know, WP footer as opposed to the head to put your JavaScript in and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, there's some prominent people on here as well.
Yeah, it's
familiar faces from the WordPress world and stuff. They seem to have some good sponsors as well.
Yeah, I saw they had a few. Yeah, they've got like WP Engine and Max CDN.
Max CDN, yeah.
Who we both use, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Nginx as a partner.
Oh, have they? Very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you like a bit of Nginx, don't you?
I do like a bit of Nginx, yeah.
I can't see Nginx. Where are they?
Partners.
They must be rotating the graphics there.
Oh, right.
Ah, there we go. Varnish and all sorts.
Yeah, Varnish is there now.
Yeah, so yeah, even if you've not dabbled with trying to tweak a little bit performance out of your sites, you know, it's quite accessible, this, so I thought it was worth a mention.
Nice.
Yeah, so those are the ones that I've been sort of checking out this week. What about yourself?
Right, well, I have two... Oh,
you've got a new job, haven't you? Yeah.
A new job?
Yeah, you become a content strategist by the looks of this entry.
I'm a content strategist, yeah.
Yeah.
There's another thing to put after my name on Twitter.
You're going to have to petition Twitter to have a longer bio box.
Oh, I'd love a longer bio.
Yeah.
Just double the bio length.
More flowery, the better, as we discussed.
Exactly. The more commas, the better. Yeah. So this is via Mr. Boag.
Paul Boag, we know him.
Indeed. And he tweeted this earlier this week, and I thought it was actually quite nice. It is Gather Content. It's called gathercontent.com. And it's a website content planning tool. And this is the sort of thing that I would automatically react with, oh, I don't need this. This is just another application. You know, there's no real use for this. But this is actually something that with client work, you know, in the distant past when I did client work, or not so distant past, this would actually be really useful, because one of the hardest tasks is getting quality content out of your client.
Oh, getting any content.
Yes, exactly.
From memory is one of the hardest things, yeah.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of people out there who probably think to them, you know, who probably get that email back from the client that says, oh, don't you write the content?
Or what you get back is a cobbled together, you know, Word 97 document or a...
If
you
know, that, yeah.
A 400-page annual report that you're expected to either upload as a PDF or
or cut down into individual pages.
Because you're an expert on all that, right?
Exactly. So this is Gather Content, and I thought it was really nice. So basically, it allows you to log in, you're allowed to add pages, you can create a sitemap, which is really simple. It's just a straightforward text area that you can put in page names and then use hyphens before the page name to denote the depth of the hierarchy.
Oh, very nice.
So you can just say home, and then underneath that you could put a hyphen services, and then under that you could put two hyphens, service A, service B, service C, etc.
Brilliant.
So just to create that hierarchy of pages. And then you can then determine what structure should be on the pages. So you can say, like, you can say stuff like, there has to be a header on every page, there has to be a subheader, there has to be a pull quote, whatever you want. There has to be an image here, there has to be this. And you can just define the structure of the page. Once that's done, you can then switch it to collaboration mode, which that then contacts your client and says you can log in and add content. Then there's a sort of revision process like there would be in, say, WordPress or lots of these collaboration tools where you can see revisions and comment on revisions. And then finally, it goes to delivery, where there's either a CMS export to things like WordPress and Drupal and all this stuff. So you can just pull it out and it creates pages in WordPress based on the content. Or you can use an API to work with a CMS they don't yet currently have.
Yeah, I was just looking at the export anywhere there. And yeah, I mean, PDF, doc, you know, Drupal, WordPress, Perch even, Sitecore, yeah. Expression Engine, XML. I mean, there's a whole host of ways of getting that data out there, which makes this very, very usable, I'd imagine.
It does, yeah. And I just think it's that it's often with client work, it's about there being a set process. The clients like to be told there's a process, what happens next.
Mm.
And I think that they'll be able to say, well, what you do is you log in to gather content and you do this, that, and the other, and you fill in these pages, and then we can work with that. That's very appealing to most freelancers and small agencies.
Yeah, it's... I was just looking at the pricing as well. I think you know, they've got the classic sort of web app. It's a wedding app, a web app pricing page, where they've got their most popular in the middle, which also happens to be the most expensive. But
which is also never the most popular.
But yeah, $79. I mean, that's what, about 50 of the Queen's English pounds, or British pounds, I should say. Get myself in trouble there. So I think, you know, if you're in that game of working with clients where content is that important, for £600 a year, that's probably a really wise investment, especially with.
And to be honest, that plan is not what everybody needs.
There's a
$49 a month is far more. It's far more likely to the, you know, the average. The average person, you know, one administrator, unlimited clients, editorial calendars, and 5 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah.
You know, I think that most people won't need more than that. But, you know, so for that 600 quid a year, as you say, is pretty good.
Saying that, you can get 2 months free if you pay annually, which I notice a lot of apps are doing now. If you pay up front, you get a sizable discount.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think, you know, this is really nice way of putting the onus back onto the client for the content, and gives them a bit of ownership and responsibility, but also lends a very professional feel to the whole project when you're sort of saying, you know, you sit down at the beginning and sort of say, this is how you enter your content. Yeah, it's really simple to edit, and we'll know when you've added it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got editorial calendars and things like that, which is quite interesting. And
And it's also, I think, you know, it's useful for content strategists and that kind of thing, as we were talking about earlier, people who are actually working with the client on the content. So it's not just for people who are sitting there as a freelancer and saying, give me the content, I don't care what it says, I just need it to put into the site. It's also for more collaborative people, you know, the people who are actually maybe involved in the development of the content.
Yeah.
Because then you've got the revision process, you can talk back and forth about what's been said and stuff.
Yeah, no, this looks really interesting. I have I've heard the name before, never really looked at it too heavily, but I think, you know, as agencies, I mean, I was talking to a lot of people this week who they're kind of, as you jokingly describe it in the past, or as has been described in the past, as sort of 360 agencies. They do you know, everything from the design and implementation through to the sort of content. And again, I think this is one of those ones that you'd be hard pushed to build your own tool for that kind of annual investment.
No, and, yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, I'm not saying, actually, I was about to say, I don't think it's cheap particularly, but then I don't think necessarily it should be cheap if you're working with sort of clients that need this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if this isn't something you can simply do by giving someone access to a WordPress backend, then you know, it's not a huge amount of money, is it?
No.
As with all these things, though, they do add up. So pick the ones you want that will make your life easier, is my sort of rule of thumb.
Yeah,
exactly. It's the opportunity cost, Kieran.
to use your buzzword.
To use my over overused and overstated phrase.
Exactly.
That looks really good. And that's gathercontent.com.
Yes, that's right.
Cool. Now, you always put videos in our links, and then you get surprised when I don't watch them. And admittedly, some of them are 5 minutes long. This one, 1 hour, 12 minutes, and some 30 seconds and change.
Yeah, this is I Am Street Fighter, and it's from Capcom, as in the makers of Street Fighter, and it's really interesting. I mean, I haven't actually watched it all. As you say, it's quite a long watch. It's feature length documentary about Street Fighter and the phenomenon that is Street Fighter and the fans that it generates. I mean, it actually is mainly focused on the fans, you know, sort of the diehard collectors and that kind of thing. And it reminded me slightly of Indie Game the Movie. That's why I thought that, you know, our listeners might be interested. It's that kind of like geeky bit retro, but interesting phenomenon of how something that's obviously was intended, probably intended to be quite a sort of throwaway thing, has become a sort of 25 year lasting phenomenon.
Well, you say that. The only game I've ever really played was Street Fighter 2. I think it was on
There you go.
Was it the SNES?
SNES, yeah. I quite like the SNES. I was saying to Katie the other day.
I used to a friend of mine had it, and his sort of sister, who was about 5 or 6 years younger than me, would always kick butt, seriously. I was always Ken or Raoul, who had the same moves.
Yeah.
But there was another guy I quite liked being as well. He was a big lad. He was a bit slower, but he was a bit mean.
Is that Baraka or something? I don't remember.
But you look back at it now and you think, oh yeah, I remember playing that, thinking it was yesterday, and it's about 20 years ago.
Yeah, Street of course, Fighter. Yeah.
I've been obviously playing it when I was 5, but so yeah, I mean that's crazy. 25 years ago. Did it start off as an arcade game? Actually, in the arcades, it wasn't for a gaming platform at home then, or?
Don't know, actually. I mean, the documentary kind of drops you straight in with the arcade, with the home entertainment stuff. I suspect, I mean, I don't know, it may go into it later on in the documentary that I haven't seen, that it didn't start as an arcade game, unlike Virtua Fighter or whatever.
It's one of those games that I remember sort of having to do the sort of thumb movements and all that to try and, you know, kick fireballs at people and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like special moves.
Special moves, yeah. There was one, I think you could spin round and then you'd, you know, say, you got fire or something, I can't remember.
That's it, yeah. They're just like that.
But yeah, I never, that and Sonic, that was about the only ones I ever got, well, you know, like 20%.
Yeah, I got played in Mortal Kombat later on.
With a K, Mortal Kombat with a K, wasn't it?
Yeah, finish him.
Yeah, no, I never did that. Is that a shoot 'em up? What did they call that, first person?
No, that was like Street Fighter.
Okay. Very good. So, what do they talk about for an hour? Do they have...
The game and the collectors. I mean, there's a guy at the very beginning who has the most enormous collection. He's got a sort of a double bedroom, and all the floor is covered in just games cartridges from all the different countries of different versions of Street Fighter or versions that have characters from Street Fighter that are crossed over.
It's like when someone from CSI New York ends up in CSI Miami, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's some game, you know, that doesn't have Street Fighter in the name at all, but it just happens that one of the characters or something related to one of the characters turns up in that game.
I've just actually Googled Street Fighter characters, and I've got the Wikipedia page here. And my goodness, it's big. Was it Balrog? Yeah. Maybe that, I don't know.
The big Russian guy?
Yeah. Oh, no, that was... I don't remember him. He was in Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Oh, I remember that.
No, he's lost me there.
So this might be beyond your time.
Where's Ken? I mean, that's such a great name. There he is. Ken Masters, is that his name? Oh, there he is. Yes. First game Street Fighter in 1987.
Wow.
He's had a few voice artists associated with him. In Japanese and English.
But they didn't say that much, did they? I suppose they grunted and had pain.
He was...
pain sounds.
What was the other guy? I'm sure that Ken was... Was it? Ah, here he is. Ryu. Not Raoul. Yes, that was the one I used to like. He was...
Who was the spaghetti legs one?
He was Japanese, Ryu. Yeah, spaghetti... I don't know. You've lost me. Lost me. Anyway, Street Fighter the movie.
Yeah.
You should go check that out. Was that on YouTube? Oh, it is on YouTube. You got that vibe?
This is a Street Fighter the movie. We should hasten to
that. Oh, no, it's not. I am Street Fighter.
Street Fighter the movie, it had Kylie Minogue in it, I think. So.
Oh, it did. Was that one of her first post Neighbours? No, she's probably quite famous by then, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's very famous by then, I think.
Miss Minogue.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, obviously, I will be watching 1 hour and the other 1 hour and 11 and a half minutes of I'm Street Fighter once we've hit stop on this particular podcast episode.
Exactly.
I'm sure you will too. But which in no way, shape, or form leads us on to our discussion topic.
No, it doesn't. But fascinating nevertheless.
Fascinating nevertheless. Yes, I'm Street Fighter. With this we've kind of touched on startups and founders and all those kind of. Cool trendy buzzwords in the past. Obviously there's the startup table in Cafe Nero in Wales amongst others. But you found a particularly interesting article on Medium. Actually, before we go on, what do you make of Medium?
I like it.
You like it?
I think
it?
It's good. I think that for some reason that feels like the quality of content coming out of Medium is very good. I'm not quite sure how they've achieved that, whether that's just because quality writers seem to have latched onto it and are now, you know, using it, or whether it's because, you know, it breeds quality by the way that it operates.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but the stuff that seems to float to the surface and that ends up in my Twitter feed or wherever I'm, you know, whether I'm picking up links on Medium seems to be really good quality. And I find that the format and everything's very readable.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it's a stunning piece of work, I think, in many ways. It's that the Tihan and Lax, the Canadian company, I think, did a lot of work on that. And they did a blog post about the development process and the design process.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a beefy blog post, but it's definitely worth a read. I don't know. It's interesting. There's a number of platforms, obviously, that have been around a long time that aggregate content, you know, WordPress.com, those kind of things. But again, it does seem to take on have a slightly different feel about it. I know not everyone is interested in, these kind of platforms. A lot of people speaking to sort of prefer to have their own sort of, you know, site and whatever. But
yeah, I quite like how you can comment on a paragraph.
That is really nice, isn't it? It's quite a different way of interacting with a piece of prose, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, I think we've discussed before that comments aren't our most favourite thing in the world.
Aren't our
but,
cup of tea.
And you know, more and more sites are going for the nested comments, which I think is actually I used to rally against it, but actually does make a lot of sense. But that you can literally just sort of click on the plus sign and comment on a particular paragraph, which I think is really nice. But that aside, this article called "Enter the Seller Founder:
Rise of the Full Stack Marketeer."
Yeah, give us a little bit of background on it.
So basically this is a guy called Kyle Tibbetts.
Right.
Co-founder of Hover App.
He's actually co-founder. He's got a few apps in there, hasn't he?
He has. He's got This Life and acquired by Shutterfly.
Acquired by the White House. Oh, no, worked at the White House. Wasn't
he worked at the White House and he's a graduate of Berkeley. So he's a smart chap, and he's just basically talking about how there has been an engineering bias in Silicon Valley, or a perceived engineering bias in Silicon Valley towards founders. This idea that you need a technical founder, etc. And he goes through discussing this and about how the sort of the full stack developer has meant that you don't need as many different people involved with the project from the very beginning, and that the cost of development has come down so much that you don't need to have hundreds of millions of pounds in the bank to make things happen. And then he goes on to talk about the full stack marketeer, which is somebody, you know, he believes the dream team is two founders, and that if founder A is an engineer,
right,
then he believes founder B should be a full stack marketeer. Which, you know, in previous situations, it would have been a sort of, they would have been that they were a smaller mini-me version of founder A, you know, could do a bit of engineering, but was better at talking to people or whatever. So ended up in that sort of sales role, that sort of face of the company role. And he draws a lot of comparisons. I mean, the obvious one is Wozniak and Jobs, where Wozniak was clearly the hardcore builder, the geek, founder A, and that Jobs, you know, ironically, given, you know, their status, as it were, was founder B, who was the, you know, less technical but interested and sort of more of a Renaissance man, like had more skills outside of tech.
It's quite interesting. As a side note, I read a quote from Wozniak recently that said that he strongly believes that Jobs never actually wrote a line of code in his life.
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all, yeah. So his basic... it's basically the culmination of this article is him saying that what you need is you need somebody who's more of a marketeer, someone who's comfortable in Photoshop, who's comfortable doing UX and product design, building marketing pages, doing support, you know, setting up MailChimp newsletters, speaking possibly.
Right. Okay.
Raise the profile of the company. What he's saying is that a founder who can just do sales doesn't cut it anymore.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting article, and there's a great quote from Dave McClure, 500 Startups, and amongst many other things. He said, "Startups focus too much on building product with limited attention to customer interaction, usability, and marketing. This is also a big hash fail." You do sort of, or you're led to believe to a certain degree, aren't you, that, you know, you can sit away coding a couple of guys or whoever, you know, a small team, and that's all you kind of need. I think, you know, given some of the recent sort of articles and thoughts that people are talking about, you do need the team needs to have a lot more to it than it did maybe a few years ago, don't you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. But I mean, I think one of the problems is the, you know, I'm not sure I agree, excuse me, I'm not sure I agree with him in terms of, you know, obviously there are a lot of companies out there who have had two founders, but these guys didn't do it alone.
That's the thing. Yeah, so true. You look back at the support networks that two famous founders often have, and it's mentors, it's investors, it's people, you know, maybe family throwing in a few grand here and there to try and get the project
exactly
off the ground.
I mean, or it's connections from family. I mean, especially, I mean, you know, diverting a little bit, in the film industry, for example, it's often which university you went to, it's who your, you know, who your parents are, all these different things equal where you end up in the industry. I think that's, you know, the same for any industry, but to a certain extent. But I think that, you know, what he's saying about somebody who needs to have a little bit of everything and isn't necessarily, you know, a designer or isn't necessarily a salesperson, I think he's right. I think there's, you know, the people have been very sort of ashamed to say, I've got a really broad range of skills.
Yes, it's an age.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's an age old debate, isn't it? You know, do you specialize or do you have a broad range of skills? And often I find that people, like, you know, I think, you know, we've both got a reasonable broad range of skills, and probably certain of the, you know, a couple of those skills are go a lot deeper in terms of knowledge. But I certainly enjoy, you know, the challenge of the business side as much as some of the coding and that kind of stuff.
I mean, what certainly frustrated me over the years and different roles that I've had has always been the division of labor.
Right.
You know, not enough startups or not enough businesses in general are well, maybe startup culture is slightly different, and I think it's probably different all across the globe as well. But I think that companies in general, especially big companies, are very quick to pigeonhole someone into a specific role. And so if you're a developer, for example, and you open your mouth in a product development meeting, then it's not about a technical problem. You're disregarded often. And so I think that's this obsession with people being very niche in what they do. And I guess that's what our culture has grown up. You know, people have got more and more specialized and less generalists. But I think that actually generalists bring a lot. And what he's saying here is basically that.
Yeah, I think one of the paragraphs that struck me, and I'll read it out, it's not very long, is the he's basically talking about the full stack marketeer, and he says, this almost myopic obsession with product development at the expense